and welcome to this special edition of the Brenner UK Cycling Podcast with me, Timothy John, and special guest Andy Horse, the route director of the Tours of Britain. Andy, thank you very much indeed for joining me today.
My pleasure, Timothy. It's good to be back on the show again.
But to say that you have had a busy schedule would be something of an understatement. So we are hugely grateful that you've managed to squeeze us in. You and Rod Ellingworth, among others, have put together a four-stage race in just 10 weeks. This, of course, is the Tour of Britain Women, which starts in Welshpool on Thursday, June the 6th, and runs over four stages, ending in Greater Manchester on Sunday, June the 9th. 10 weeks, Andy, to put together a four-stage race. Just how busy have you been?
I guess it's fair to say I've been reasonably busy. I've spent a lot of time on the road. It's been a labour of love. But yeah, when you look at it back and when you say 10 weeks like that, it really does make you look back and reflect on what we actually have achieved. Unfortunately, this year, just due to, you know, the way things have fallen, it's only four stages. It is our intention to get this race back up to the full six stages that it has been previously. But yeah, the four stages we've got are four very, very unique and individual stages. So yeah, really excited about it.
Well, we're going to go into those stages in depth in the course of the next half an hour or so. But just to stick with this theme for a moment of deadlines, I mean, the last time we spoke last year, you were absolutely up to your eyes in it at the Cycling World Championships in Glasgow. I know you're a man who likes a deadline, but has this been the tightest you've ever faced?
I think for a race in its entirety, absolutely, yes. Turning individual stages round, I think we've done one in about 9 weeks before now. So that's just one individual stage. So yeah, that's probably the shortest amount of time we've ever done one. But to turn a whole four-stage race around in 10 weeks, and some of these stages are very, very complex. On paper, they just look like certainly stage four just looks like a route around Manchester. But when you look into it, it actually involves like seven local authorities. So it's almost dealing with, well, it is dealing with seven local authorities to make it happen. So, you know, there's an awful lot of moving parts on every single stage. You know, there's a number of local authorities across all four stages. So it's not just a simple, you know, we're dealing with, say, for example, Powys. You're dealing with Powys, Denbighshire, Gwynedd and Conwy, you know, and that's just on stage one. So, yeah, it's been a challenge. I think working on the Worlds has obviously, stood me in good stead for having many balls up in the air and juggling at the same time. So, it's been great. And, you know, all the local authorities that we've dealt with across from stage one all the way through to stage four have just been so happy and so pleased to work with us. And, you know, that the Tour of Britain Women's race is actually happening. So that also makes things a lot easier.
And how valuable have those relationships that you've built up over years proved to be, you know, when you're operating to such a tight deadline? Welshpool was in the race back in 2022. Warrington was in the men's tour in 2021. Has it been valuable to touch base with a network of established contacts?
Absolutely. It makes it a lot easier. Taking the race to a local authority or a region that maybe has never had a professional bike race before is like a daunting process for them, because, you know, they don't really understand what's involved. And until maybe that, you know, you're sort of two or three months down the line with the processes, and maybe, you know, they've seen some racing on the TV and understand, you know, what it is. So to go into, you know, like, as I say, 10 weeks ago, and to sit down in front of people that we've have a long-standing relationship with has really helped, because they understand how the bike race works and moves. And I think, you know, as much as it's moved to British Cycling Events, which is the company behind the new Tour Britain Women, for local authorities, knowing that the you know, some of the key people that are going to be involved with the routes, the starts and the finishes, are key people that have been involved in this event for many, many years, is also a comfort to those guys. So, yeah, it's been great. It's, you know, just, it's almost like we've picked up where we left off with some relationships, including, you know, obviously the Tour of Britain was in Wrexham last year. So those relationships were still very fresh. But as you mentioned, you know, the Tour of Britain in Warrington in 2021, they obviously have the third stage of the Tour of Britain Women. But it was good and exciting to see that it's still the same people there from 3 years ago, and you know, to a degree we can run out the same sort of plans and that we had back in 2021. So it's made the planning process a lot easier in some places. Take for example stages 2 and 3, you know, they're going through Cheshire West and Chester and Cheshire East, and we've had long-standing relationship with these guys for many, many years. So, you know, it's just like, you know, going back and seeing familiar faces in meetings and everybody understanding straight away kind of thing, which makes everybody's lives a little bit easier.
Yeah, and especially as I keep on saying, on such a tight deadline, you can't overstate the value of long-term relationships. You mentioned the phrase, Andy, a couple of minutes ago in a sort of metaphorical sense, talking about moving parts, but it's literally true. In your case, you're out on the road with Sergeant Duncan Street of the National Escort Group. I know that's, you know, previously been your working method. Has there been time to do that this year?
Yes. Yeah, one of the things that we've said, right, you know, okay, yes, there's only 10 weeks to do this, but we are not compromising on safety, and we're not compromising on how we would have planned this if we'd have had 12 months, 18 months to plan it. So we've actually, we have done 3 full route recons as we always would do. So yeah, you know, there was the initial one where we went out, looked at the routes, literally changed some of the routes while we were out there, because, you know, there was a better option or it didn't quite work. We made some changes on the ground. Then a few weeks later, we were back out onto the routes. We did the second route recon. That's when we started to look at, right, where's the specific sporting points going to be? So where's the sprint going to be? Where the Queen of the Mountains going to be? And then literally just a handful of weeks ago, we did our final route recon. So we've attacked and treated this exactly the same as if we'd have had 18 months planning time. So, you know, that's the kind of, yeah, how busy we've been. And at the same time, we're looking at stuff for the Tour of Britain men in September as well. So yeah, there's been a lot sort of a lot happening, but rest assured, you know, the due diligence and the safety that hopefully everybody that's come to expect of this event now will see shining through, as has always been the case.
Well, look, let's not squander this opportunity to talk to the route director. Let's get into detail now on the 4 stages of this route. And as I mentioned, a grand apart in Mid Wales. This race starts on Thursday, June the 6th in Welshpool, with a 142.5-kilometre stage to Llandudno, loaded with 2,276 metres of climbing. This is a beast of an opening stage. Welshpool, as Andy said, no stranger to hosting major bike races. It hosted the Finnish town in 2022 for the Women's Tour, and a stage won in a sprint by Grace Brown. And in the press release, Andy, you'll be able to add to this, it's described as a formidably challenging opening stage, one with 1 sprint point and 2 QOMs. The first QOM comes after 65K. That's the Llandudno climb. I'm sure I've mangled the pronunciation. Also known as the Berwyn Pass, 6 kilometres at 5.4%. And the second QOM comes within a series of punchy climbs with 10 kilometres to go. These are likely to whittle down the bunch as it enters Llandudno, and the finish will take the riders past Conwy Castle for a, quote, spectacular finish on the promenade. Andy, you started this race with the very hardest stage. Yeah. What impact might that have on the final outcome?
I think when you look on paper and you look at Welshpool and where Llandudno are situated, that cliched saying of you can't make an omelette without breaking some eggs, You can't get to Llandudno from Welshpool without going through some serious climbs. So, you know, it was almost like it was, you know, we had to take the race through that route. And, you know, just by the nature of it, it was going to be difficult. It was going to be a tricky opening stage. But I think as opening stages go, it's a fantastic one. You know, it's like it really is going to set the scene on day one. So yeah, we're really excited about this stage. The views from, you know, just about every corner you turn, you know, there's a whole different view. And even from, you know, the final QOM, you can look across and you can see the top of Snowdon on a clear day as well. So you know, right in the center of the Snowdon National Park. So it's great. You know, it's some of the roads we've used before on previous editions of Tour of Britain, men and women. You know, there are some very familiar roads. In fact, the first handful of kilometres on this stage will be familiar to the women who were involved back in 2022, because they were the dying kilometres of that stage. We're just running them in the opposite direction. So it's going to be a grippy stage. Anybody that's thinking of setting their stall out to sort of show their dominance on this race, the opening stage is going to be the one for them to shine. And as you say, the dying kilometres, you know, you just need to look at the profile. It's just undulating right up until sort of maybe 5 kilometres to go before they drop down and finish on the promenade there in Llandudno. So, yeah. It's whoever goes across the line there on Thursday the 6th, crosses that line first, is going to be well-deserved.
I gave the sort of blunt facts of this climb, the Berwyn Pass, 6 kilometres at 5.4% average. But can you give us a bit of detail there, Andy? What type of climb are we dealing with here? Is it straight? Is it twisting? What's the surface like?
I think it's a bit of everything, really. It's one of these classic Welsh climbs that goes up from the valley floor right up to the top of the valley. Some of it is sheltered, so the early part of it is sheltered, and then literally it is climbing up out of that valley. But the way that they've made the road, it's literally clinging on the edge of the hillside. So, you know, if it's a headwind down there, the headwind will sort of like absolutely blast down there and sort of like be forcing the riders, you know, making sure that really does sap the legs. But we got out of the car on the final route recon. We marked up the sporting points just to so that my technical teams know where to put all their equipment and everything. And we had a good look around, and I'm afraid to say the prevailing wind does look like it is a majority headwind. So, you know, that will make what already on paper is a reasonably tough climb, a little bit tougher. But, you know, if they get the chance to have a look at their surroundings, I mean, looking over to their left, you know, the valley, there's the traditional sort of Welsh waterfall right at the head of that valley as well. So, yeah, it's stunning. But yeah, it's certainly not an easy one. A couple of little hairpins, a couple of cattle grids. Yeah, it's a climb that has it all.
I mean, it's 65K into the stage, Andy. Are you expecting this one to be the decisive climb, or, as mentioned in the press release, a series of punchy climbs in the last 10K? Could that be the sting in the tail?
It's like any stage of any bike race. You know, it depends how it's ridden, depends how the riders want to ride it. Obviously, it all comes down to teamwork and who gets away and who doesn't. There's more chances for the damage to be done in the last sort of, you know, 20 to 15Ks than there are, you know, 65Ks in. You know, 65Ks in, that's a great climb. But, you know, it's like you could do the damage there, but depending on who you take with you to do the damage, you know, they could organise themselves and they could come back. You know, if I was a team manager, you know, this is be something that I'd be looking at and saying, right, we need to look at the back end of this race, because everybody's going to have tired legs here. But there are a series of rollers, as I say, within the last 20 kilometres that more damage could possibly be done than actually, you know, on the biggest climb of the day.
Yeah, and with all that in mind, I guess you'd get pretty long odds on a bunch finish here. This looks to me, you know, as if it's got reduced group sprint written all over it, or even a solo winner. What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely a minimum reduced group sprint, you know. But that's not to say that, you know, it's not going to be a solo winner. There is opportunity, and there's only got to be that lull. You know, we've seen it in some of the racing recently. You know, it's just like, oh, we'll just let that go. And then all of a sudden, that gap's gone out from 15 to 20 seconds to like a minute and 15 seconds. And that's all you will need here and you know, to roll across the line solo. But I'm probably going to go with a reduced bunch sprint for this stage.
Let's move on now to stage two. This is Wrexham to Wrexham, a shorter stage with a little less climbing, but still pretty savage. 140.2 kilometres with 1,570 metres of climbing. It's another stage with 2 QOMs and 1 sprint. And it's another stage that won't lack beautiful scenery heading on through Denbighshire, West Cheshire and Chester. Starts and finishes in the centre of Wrexham on Chester Street, and then the peloton heads north and enters West Cheshire after 20 kilometres. The climbing begins soon after, as the route runs alongside the Peckforton Hill Range, which is part of the Mid-Cheshire Ridge. The route crosses back into Wrexham via Bangor-on-Dee and Overton, on into Johnstown for the GPM Sprint, the same location, I think, Andy, as last year, close to our Brother Industries facility in that part of the world. But gosh, the highlight of this stage has got to be Horseshoe Pass, isn't it? Which sadly slipped from the route last year. Wonderful to see it in this year, and the riders will hit that with 30 kilometres to go. Expect massive crowds, and that descent could trigger a fast run in to Wrexham. Again, Wrexham, Andy, that must be pretty well thumbed in your contacts book, I'd imagine. How useful has that been this time around, building on those established relationships?
Again, very, very useful. We've worked with Wrexham for a number of years, even going back to, I think, 2015 was one of the first times that we finished there. So, yeah, it's good to work with partners that we have a long-standing relationship with. And as I said previously, you know, having an understanding of how this race works is half the battle. You know, it's everything becomes a little bit easier when everybody understands, you know, what it is with happening. And this is quite exciting. Obviously, this stage, As you've said, you know, it was used in the Tour of Britain last year. Unfortunately, we didn't get to have the Horseshoe Pass bit in the Tour of Britain last year, but we've got it into the Tour of Britain women's event. And it's, you know, the women running on exactly the same roads that the men use, which is a long-term goal of, you know, having parity between the two events. And this is actually, you know, the second of the four stages, or the first of the four stages that run on the same roads, as big as the final stage in Manchester also runs on many, many roads that the men's races run on. So yeah, it's going to be exciting. I mean, Cheshire, Western Chester as an area is fantastic for bike riding. You know, there's lane after lane after lane that, you know, that's just ripe for exploring. But yeah, we've just for the ease of, you know, our 10-week planning period, we've run out with as much as sort of like, you know, the same route that we had in September. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting. As you say, that we've got the two QOMs, the sprint location, the same as it was back in September. But, you know, we have the addition of the Horseshoe Pass. And, yeah, that's, whilst it's not a super difficult climb, it's a long one. By the time they get to the top with a little over 20 kilometres into the finish, again, it's not a straightforward finish. There's a couple of little kickers, you know, that fall within the last 15 kilometres. There's a few narrow lanes with, you know, sharp left and right turns. So anybody that's going to be, you know, with focusing on this stage for the win, that they've got to be switched on. You've got to be at the head of the peloton here, and, you know, really driving the race, and you know, having looked at the road book and Velo Viewer to ensure that they understand it, because by no means is it a straightforward drag strip run into the finish in Wrexham.
So a technical finale after Horseshoe Pass. Is this another one, Andy, that breakaway artists will have sort of ringed in red on their calendar?
I think it's possible, you know. I genuinely do, because, you know, there's plenty of the little lanes in the dying kilometres that give you the out of sight, out of mind, you know, like that's it, you know, pin your ears back and you're gone kind of thing. So yeah, you know, in the last 3 kilometres, yes, it's a reasonably untechnical run in. So, you know, if you get to 3 kilometres to go and you've got quite a good gap, I think you're going to stand a very good chance of, you know, staying away, because, you know, it's maybe the 10 to 15 kilometres prior to that that's really going to make the difference on this stage. It's certainly not a gimme from the top. It's not a, right, we're at the top now and it's downhill to the finish. It's certainly not that. There's some big, wide roads to navigate that then go into some narrower roads, as I say, twisty, turny. Couple of little kickers where Velo Viewer actually goes red, so which is quite good in the dying kilometres. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting one.
There are a number of riders, Andy, who will be striking you from their Christmas card list. I'm absolutely certain. Any sprinter still in the race by stage 3 will breathe, well, something of a sigh of relief. This is a stage that begins and ends in front of Warrington Town Hall. It follows an anti-clockwise route heading south, crosses the River Mersey and the Greater Manchester Canal, on past Walton Hall and Gardens, and then into Cheshire West and Chester. The route ramps up from the 25K mark in preparation for the day's two QOM points. The first of those comes at Broken Cross. After a 5.6-kilometer climb up from Pexhill Road, the peloton then descends into Prestbury with the Pennine foothills in sight. Second QOM at Potch Wrigley, which I have looked at on Velovia and looks absolutely savage in the foothills of the Peak District. And a couple of further kickers just for good measure in Mottram St Andrew, then on through Knutsford to Mere in the GPM point, and then a short, sharp descent from Appleton Thorn should set the peloton onto a fast, flat run back into Warrington. I mean, I'm talking about sprinters, Andy, and then spend the next 2 minutes talking about climbs. So who exactly does this stage suit?
This stage is absolutely a sprinter stage. We looked at this stage right at the very beginning and we thought, right, the run into Warrington is a complex run in terms of traffic management and shutting it down and making sure it's safe. So what we wanted to do was try and design a stage that made sure that we could keep the finish and what we were required at the finish to be as safe and as least complex as possible. So we actually took a couple of climbs out of this route, and we've got a couple of shallower climbs. You know, they're still reasonable, QOMs and well worth the categorization. But yeah, we took out what would have been like a first category climb to design the stage so that we could get, you know, as much as the peloton into the finish in Warrington in one big hit as possible. So after they've been through Mottram St Andrew, they drop down into Alderley Edge, through Knutsford, have the sprint point of the day, and then it is a relatively straightforward, almost sort of downhill flat run into the finish in Warrington. The run into Warrington has changed a little bit. We've taken a couple of sort of junctions out and other hairy bits from when we were there in 2021. So it's going to make it, you know, absolutely spot on for the sprinters teams. You know, the roads are wide. They're going to be able to organise themselves and then, yeah, just drop their sprinters off with a couple of 100 metres to go.
Let's get on to the finale now, stage four. This begins outside the National Cycling Centre, very much on home turf for British Cycling, and then takes a route through Greater Manchester and out into the wilds before ending in Lee. This is yet another route with two QOM points and one GPM. Race, as we say, starts at the National Cycling Centre, following anti-clockwise route across the Ashton Canal, then northeast to Oldham, and towards the first QOM after 23 kilometres. This is a climb in the Pennines from Delft to Grains Bar. The rolling route then continues through Shaw and Rochdale. A fast descent through Edenfield leads to the second QOM. Quotes, short but formidable Ramsbottom Rake. And we've seen that a couple of times over the years. And of course, that will be etched painfully into the memory of the hill climb community. So Andy, tell us about this one. This is a comparatively short stage, but purely from my own observations, you know, the recent Giro d'Italia, you know, the shorter stages, the first three stages were short by Grand Tour standards and were thrilling. So what type of finale could this induce? Will this appeal to teams who have yet to get anything out of the race? Is this, you know, teams with victory in sight going all in to seal the deal? What type of appeal does a short stage on the final day offer?
Yeah, the parkour of this route, just it lends itself to everything you've just said there. So it lends itself to the team that want to control it to the finish. It lends itself to the breakaway specialists that maybe want to get away and have a lone victory. It also lends itself to the team that haven't done anything to this point in the stage, right through, you know, from the beginning to sort of like, you know, maybe 20 kilometers to go. It's either up or it's down. And there are some big ups and downs in it. You know, we just categorized two of the climbs, as you mentioned, Grains Bar and the Rake. But, you know, there's plenty of other ups and downs on this stage that, you know, that can make a difference. You know, this comes at the end of sort of 4 days. the opening 2 days will, you know, they've certainly will have had those in their legs and a bit of an easier day on stage three. But yeah, this stage shouldn't be underestimated. You know, it's going to be full gas from the word go. And as you say, you know, it's like from previous experience and having watched the Giro quite intently for 3 weeks, you know, it is the shorter stages that sometimes give the most excitement because they're unpredictable. And then, you know, the unpredictability of this stage means that, you know, if you're not constantly at the front monitoring what's happening, you could miss that break, you could miss that major split and find yourself the wrong side of it. You know, getting on top of some of these climbs is very open and exposed moorland. You know, it's we could see some echelons forming, we could see, you know, just about anything. And I guess across all four stages, you know, looking at how our summer has been so far this year, you know, it's if we get away with four dry stages, it's going to be fantastic. But, you know, on current sort of forecast, it's very similar to what we've been looking at. So the wind and the rain are going to play a part on all four stages, and none more so on this, you know, stage. The last 20 kilometres, you know, are really quite a flat sort of downhill run into the finish in Lee Sports Village in Wigan. Again, on big, super big, wide roads, main roads that are going to allow the sprinters teams to, you know, gather their team together to, you know, look to launch off a sprinter for the finish. I mean, it's very hard to say what this stage is going to do. The Tour Britain Men has been over these roads on two occasions now. And again, it's ended in a sprint on both times. But there's been a lot more flat running to the finish when we finished on Deansgate. So this one, yeah, it's a bit of an unknown. I would go with a reduced bunch sprint for this one. But yeah, I know the noise, as we've been up through the rake at Ramsbottom before, the noise and the spectators there has been fantastic. And knowing that the final stage is on a Sunday again, you know, and the support we've had throughout this stage, the previous two editions, has been phenomenal. So, you know, whatever happens, they are going to have such a warm welcome on this stage. And, you know, it will be a very fitting final stage.
Yeah, I mean, those images from previous races up the Ramsbottom rake, I mean, they're sort of quintessential British road racing, aren't they? What wonderful images. And as you say, huge crowds. Give us a sense, Andy, of the scale of the task in taking a race out of central Manchester. It's a major city in the north of England, Brother UK's hometown, of course. You mentioned in passing earlier that you've had to deal with seven local authorities to get this done. You're no stranger to doing that. Who can forget that wonderful finish in 2019 of the Men's Tour of Britain? But can you give us a sense of the logistical and administrative challenge in taking a race out from the National Cycling Centre?
I think, you know, anybody that sort of looks at a map of Manchester will see just how urban Manchester is and how far you have to go out before, you know, that there is a bit of colour in a map that isn't sort of like, you know, a very densely populated, area. I mean, you know, just for an example, we're going on one of the major roads that feeds into Oldham, the A627, which then in turn feeds onto the A62. But to make the race happen and to make the race as safe as possible, we're actually committing offside of this dual carriageway of the A627 to then drop onto the A62 offside dual carriageway to travel along to then turn off to stay offside of another dual carriageway before we cut across. So in the first sort of 5 or 6 kilometres of that stage, I would say four of those kilometres are offside on dual carriageway systems on the main roads heading into Oldham. So these are the kind of technical challenges that we've had to look at to make sure that we can get the race to move in the direction that we want it to go to. It ticks the boxes of the local authorities for the areas they want the race to visit. And also, believe it or not, you know, taking a race offside on a dual carriageway, it actually speeds the whole process up for shutting the roads down and reopening them quickly. As you can imagine, if you're crossing over a dual carriageway, you've got to chop the traffic at one end so that particular section is closed anyway. So, you know, we're utilising a piece of road that would have been dead anyway because we'd have had to cut across it. So, you know, it's just the thought process that, you know, we have to go through, and we look at things and we take it to pieces and say, right, okay, well, yes, that's the route, but that's just one side of it. It's like, how are we going to get the race onto that route and through it and safely, and, you know, everything back up and running, you know, in a timely manner afterwards. So yeah, that's all within the first sort of 6 kilometers of that stage. So yeah, but there's a lot goes into it, and, you know, it is taken in it is taken in turn by turn, and, you know, junction by junction, and you know, by shutting X road here, what effect does it have on Y and Z roads over here? And, you know, are we, you know, causing ourselves a bottleneck and putting ourselves into a metaphorical cul-de-sac, as it were? So, but yeah, it's dealing with all the local authorities is good, because, you know, all they want to see is the success of the bit of the race in their area. But, you know, because their areas all butt up to each other, you know that absolutely every single metre of those roads are covered, and everybody understands what it is that we're trying to achieve.
Let's zoom out now. We've looked at the route in some detail, but to consider this race in context, that there is so much goodwill behind it. People really understand, I think, just how valuable that the Tours of Britain, whether it's men's, whether it's women's, is to the health of British cycle sport more generally. Lloyds Bank have come on board as title sponsor to British Cycling. I won't ask you to comment on the commercial side. That's a long way from what you're involved in. But have you had that sense that there's a tailwind behind you here, that there is that sort of sense of goodwill, this willingness that this event will be a success?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, we've, like, from the very outset, you know, when we started having these conversations 10 weeks ago, it was, you know, we're going to make this happen. And, you know, we've got everybody around us that can make this happen. And, you know, a collective will of people that, you know, that have a can-do attitude. So, you know, it's not been without the bumps along the way, as you can imagine. But, you know, we're sat here with just a little over a week now before the event is due to start. And yeah, everything is falling into place nicely. You know, from my personal perspective of, you know, my input into what we've done, it's always been safety first. You know, we've implemented everything that we would normally implement. And, you know, we've been fortunate enough that, you know, we can do other bits and pieces that will add to the safety of this. You know, there's an additional route safety car. There's some additional motor safety marshals that are going to be involved in this. Some additional signage has been installed and, you know, is actually out on the route right now. So, you know, there's been bits and pieces that have been done with the collective will, everybody. And yeah, it's just allowed it to happen and be, you know, as smooth as you can make a project like this being delivered within 10 weeks.
One of those people with a can-do attitude is the race director, Rod Ellingworth. And, you know, that, I think, sort of set the tone for this sort of whole endeavour, that it just seemed, although Rod comes from a different area of the sport as a coach, as a general manager of a World Tour team, the man behind Project Rainbow, of course, his first time, I think, as a race director, but my goodness, what authority in the sport, what experience. How has it been working with Rod?
Listen, it's been fantastic. You know, I've known Rod for a number of years. Obviously, our paths have crossed throughout, you know, his time at Ineos Grenadiers and my time with, you know, being the route director of the Tour Britain. So, you know, our paths have crossed on numerous occasions. And yeah, working with Rod is fantastic. I mean, you know, just for his enthusiasm and his passion for getting this event across the line, you know, and being the one that's, you know, with us and sort of rolling his sleeves up. He's been out on all of the route recons with us. He's put his advice in, and, you know, we've changed the route a little bit, as I previously mentioned, on Rod's suggestion, and, like, saying, right, okay. And it's nice to have his input and understanding. And, you know, there is no question of his experience of where he's been and what he's done before this. But, you know, it's also a learning curve for Rod as his first time as a race director. And it's been nice to be there and be by his side and, you know, impart all the experience and knowledge that I've learned over, you know, the last sort of 12, 14 years doing what I do. So yeah, it's been a great experience. Rod really is a massive part of this whole process. And he has been along, you know, alongside us for the whole process as well. You know, he has been there, you know, unwavering support. So I think we're all excited about getting the race underway and, you know, seeing what we can do. But not just the Tour Britain women or the Tour Britain men for in September this year. But, you know, as you say, with Lloyd's coming on, that's hopefully opened up, you know, a bit of long, you know, a bit of safety and longevity in both of the events. And, you know, maybe we can now look at, you know, how we develop both of these events as well. And, you know, maybe turn them both on their heads and do something different. You know, there's plenty of good times ahead. I think, you know, having spoken with Rod and my commitment, we're certainly not looking to go anywhere anytime soon. So, creation of another formidable partnership, hopefully.
Well, absolutely. I'm sure he'd say exactly the same about you, Andy. You mentioned that, you know, you've been glad to have him by your side. I'm sure he finds your experience equally valuable, and you're not the only person on this squad with valuable experience of putting on big races. Mark Leyland, the start director, Paul Knight, the finish director. Again, these must be people that you've worked alongside for many years.
God, yeah, Mark, I've worked alongside with Mark literally since I started my journey. So Mark's been with us since 2010. He had a couple of years hiatus when he went to go and work on the Commonwealth Games and also the Worlds. So it's not like he stepped out of the sport. He just stepped into different areas. So Mark brings a wealth of support. And Paul, we've worked with Paul since, I think, 2014 or 2015. So again, another, you know, Paul brings to this not just experience of being like the finish director, but Paul was the transport and logistics director at Sweet Spot. So he brings with him the wealth of experience of having run those roles. So, yeah, I think, you know, between the three of us, we've got sort of most posts covered. And yeah, it's been great sort of working with those guys again. And yeah, it's just like our old times almost.
Do you feel that how high the stakes are here? There's a lot riding on this, isn't there? I mentioned earlier that it's a sort of beacon for British cycle sport in general, really. Do you feel that pressure, or are you kind of immune from it being buried in the detail, in the nuts and bolts?
Yeah, it's deep down, obviously, we know the pressure that there. We know the stakes that are involved with making sure this is right. And obviously, we know with Lloyd's coming on as the partnership now, as you know, that's increased that a little bit. But, you know, we're confident. You know, we've delivered many events before. Between all of us, we've delivered these events, and we've tried to keep the formulas as simple and as straightforward as they have been in the past, so that everybody that, you know, that's along with us on this journey is not only, you know, that they're sort of, quite a lot of the people haven't, you know, delivered an event of this size within cycling before. So, you know, everybody's learning, and we're there to help and sort of, you know, be the glue to bind everything together to make sure everything sort of happens. So yeah, we're not immune to the pressures. We understand what it is we have to deliver. But then that goes from, you know, the crew that we've had in the past, you know, putting the sprints, the KOMs out, doing the branding at the start and the finishes, all of the, you know, the commissaires are the, you know, people that have been on our events before, even the judges, you know, it's like a big family that all comes together, you know, for the great and the good of these, you know, these events. So, you know, it's not just, you know, it doesn't just fall on sort of a handful of people's shoulders. It's like a big, you know, a big group effort, and everybody pulls in together to make sure that, you know, this event is a success. So yeah, there's many, many, many moving parts to it, but there are also many moving people to it as well that, you know, ensure that this event happens. And yeah, it's going to be good to get to the HQ hotel in a week's time and, you know, reacquaint with people that we haven't seen maybe since September or even longer. But to know that everybody there is there for the success of that event, you know, is comforting.
Andy, thank you very much for all your time today. I've spent the best part of an hour now, I think, talking about how busy you are while wasting your time talking about how busy you are. So very much appreciated, and wishing you all the luck in the world for the Tour of Britain Women.
Thanks, Timothy. Been a pleasure.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.